Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Got a steal, and he looked at his hand.
I don't know. And that wasn't even the hand that he swatted down with. I'm not sure if he jammed it into the back of Henderson or what exactly happened, but we'll see if he'll remain in the ball game or not. It doesn't look like he will.
Now
he just jammed his hand into Henderson's back is what the guys are telling us.
Now they put in Jamal Crawford.
And he will go to the locker room.
Yeah.
He is upset.
He'll go for X-ray.
Griffin with the jumper. Back to the other end of the court.
Rob, I didn't see the play. I just know he fractured his hand. He'll get evaluated tomorrow, but it obviously doesn't look very good for him. It doesn't look great for him either. We'll see that tomorrow. Plan it on one move, actually. He said he felt great, and that's the one thing he said, because I felt great out there, and he said I'd plan it and I felt something. We're not sure with Blake yet.
Were you aware of Mark Cuban's comments before the game when he said Kevin was the only superstar on this team, and how do you react to that?
Hold up. He's an idiot. He's an idiot. All right, that's what we got to say about that. You know, he's an idiot. Next question.
To hear boos come from the home crowd set off a fuse inside of me, and like I said, I lashed out and I shouldn't have. Yeah, it got up in that high skies, that dust period, in one brief spot, and I mean, nobody, I'm looking around screaming, I don't see it, nobody else sees it. It was unfortunate. It was frustration. I don't want to hear that at home. You know, we deal with that enough on the road. With that being said, I should be more mature and more grown up than that to be able to deal with it, and that's where I apologize.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the Extravaganza right here, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Appreciate you being along for this Tuesday afternoon edition. And we are loaded for bear. So much news to get into. Thank you so much for being a part of it. We're going to talk coming up here in about 25 minutes or so. Tigers baseball. We're going to talk with Anthony Fenech. Tigers beat writer covers the team for the Detroit Free Press. We'll find out what he thinks about, well, obviously the state of the Tigers right now. Finally getting some production from Miguel Cabrera. Obviously going through a pretty tough stretch. And talk about one guy going through a tough stretch. You just heard a cut there from Tyler Collins, who flipped the bird at the entire Comerica fan base after losing a fly ball or a pop fly in the sun. And or at dusk or whatever you want to call it, he couldn't spot it, he couldn't find it, they let him hear it, and he let them see it. And not only did he fly that bird without a license, he also mouthed, blank everyone here or everybody here. The Vine is up right now on the Facebook page for ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Just go to 106.5 The Ticket on Facebook. You can see it for yourself. You can also see it on Twitter. We got that Vine also up there at Twitter. Sports Radio 106.5. So we're going to talk to Fenech about the state of the Tigers and about Mr. Collins, no question about that. But we have a lot of other big news outside of the boundaries of the Toledo and Cleveland sports teams that we kind of cover and generally like to talk about here. Because the biggest news of the day, oh, and by the way, with the draft 2 days away too, Dennis Manilow will join us to give us some thoughts about the draft from the Cleveland side of things at about 4:05. On draft day, Thursday, we are going to hear from Detroit and Cleveland writers about what they expect at the 11th hour there, right before they're actually going to be on the clock, talking about the Lions and the Cleveland Browns. So we'll do that with Justin Rogers and Scott Petrick on Thursday. We'll get some analysis from Manilow today, though, on the draft and on the NBA playoffs. And that's where we are with three big stories in the NBA playoffs today. At least three, but the three biggest ones you just heard a couple of clips on. No pun intended with the word clips. But the injury, the broken hand to Chris Paul, CP3, one of the best point guards in the NBA, one of the best players in the NBA, it pretty much destroys many, many things. For one, it destroys the Clippers' chance of maybe emerging from a very, very difficult, loaded Western Conference to the finals. Number two, it destroys any chance that those of us who are rooting for the Warriors to not go back to the finals, that they might get knocked out by the Clippers. Because without CP3, the Clippers are done. Make no mistake about it. You also had a quad injury to Blake Griffin, who suddenly is acting as if he's just made of glass. And I'm not questioning the injury. I'm just saying legitimately he's injured a lot and has been for the last a couple of seasons at various points in time. But the Clips and the injury to CP3 knocking him out probably for the rest of the playoffs, I mean, almost a guarantee. They haven't said guaranteed out, but likely is what they're saying. That destroys any chance, even if they get by. And right now there's no certainty they'll get by the Blazers. Because Damian Lillard and the Blazers have evened things up now in that series in CP3's absence, in Blake Griffin's absence, at two games apiece out west. But I was assuming that with a healthy roster, the Clippers would certainly get past Portland and then maybe be the team. Because I don't know if you heard this, but the second major NBA story, of course, is the continuing fallout and aftermath of the Steph Curry, the soon-to-be two-time league MVP, Steph Curry, missing at least 2 weeks, at least, with his knee injury, a sprained, they're calling it a grade one, so that's the lowest, that's the most mild, grade one sprain of his MCL in that knee, and it's going to cost him 2 weeks. I heard earlier today on SportsCenter, they were saying that it will cost him the rest of this series against the Houston Rockets, whether it's probably be one game, but whether it's one or two games is irrelevant. But based on the schedule for the second round, it would cost him the first four of the second round series, which is just enormous.
And that's for just the 2 week of reevaluation part of the whole equation.
That's just to get back to that's right, before they can say, okay, now let's have a look, see in where you are. It's not 2 weeks and definitely back. It's 2 weeks. We'll give you a little test here and kind of see where we are. And that, which means it could be another game and another game. It could be, five or six games in that series, maybe even the whole series, if things don't break right for the Golden State Warriors and Steph Curry. The voice you just heard, of course, belonged to Jim Cushlin. I was actually waiting to introduce Jim Cushlin to thank him for his fantastic montage and have the studio audience give him a rounding ovation. But he piped in there, so he got his ovation. Now it's all good. Yeah, Jim, you're right. We talked about this yesterday. You looked it up, and the round two of the playoffs scheduled to begin in on or about May 2nd. Could be May 1st, could be April 30th, depending.
And incidentally, we do have a May 1st already, because since the Thunder won, they're already tentatively scheduling game one of that series for Sunday. That would be the 1st.
Okay, so there you go. So assuming, but now we do know that the Blazers and the Clippers are not going to be done soon. It's 2-2.
Right.
So they've got at least two more there. So we're probably looking at May 2nd, then, I would imagine.
That would be my guess at this point, too.
And even at that date, if that's the way things played out, again, we're talking at least four out of the seven games in the second round that Steph Curry would miss. I'm telling you, Jim, it's blowing my mind how fortunate things are seemingly for the Warriors, even when the chips are down or even when they get dealt a bad hand, things kind of break right for them. Last year they didn't have to face Tony Parker,
because
Tony Parker went down and the Spurs lost in an upset. They didn't have to face Kyrie because he went down in game one. They seem to be, a team of destiny, a team of fate, whatever you want to call it, but they always seem to get breaks when it comes to injuries.
Yep.
And here yesterday, we're all talking about, wow, finally something happened against the Warriors. Steph Curry goes down. And lo and behold, can one of the other probably three best point guards in the NBA, I think we would probably all agree, yes.
Sure.
Curry, Westbrook, Paul, not necessarily in that order, but probably. Or Curry, Paul, Westbrook, probably the three best point guards in the NBA. But, here we are, a Clippers team that is very, very motivated to beat a Warriors team that can't stand them, I think could have been in a great position to beat the Blazers yesterday, go up 3-1, and then get ready for the Warriors in a second round where Chris Paul wouldn't have to deal with Steph Curry, where he'd be able to exploit that injury to its maximum effect.
Right.
And lo and behold, the basketball gods give another great big toothy grin at the Warriors and say, don't worry, fellas, I got this. We got this, the gods, if you will, small g, saying we're going to knock out CP3 to even that up a little bit. And then, of course, if you look at the rest of the roster, depth for depth, the Warriors still win. So it's just one of those strange things. And then those are the top two NBA stories we want to get into today. And the third one, Jim, is involving one of those other guys. Well, you know, I just mentioned the top three stories probably in the NBA right now. Or I'm sorry, not stories, top three point guards in the NBA right now being Curry, Westbrook, and Chris Paul. Russell Westbrook is one of those top three stories. We all heard, and you played it in the montage there, Jim. What we heard is Russell Westbrook not even being given a chance to answer the question that was asked of him by the reporter after the Thunder finished off the Dallas Mavericks. Why? Because Kevin Durant leapt to Westbrook's defense in response to the Mark Cuban comment. And I think this is the right one.
Mark Cuban's comments before the game, when he said Kevin was the only superstar on this team. And how do you react to that?
Hold up. He's an idiot. He's an idiot. All right, that's what we got to say about that. He's an idiot.
Now, make no mistake. I want to be very, very clear about this. I will promise you that in no way, shape, or form does Kevin Durant really think that Mark Cuban is an idiot. Mark Cuban is a billionaire. Mark Cuban is pretty much a self-made billionaire. He's pretty bright. He's not an idiot.
A loudmouth, but not an idiot.
What Kevin Durant said there, what's that, Jim?
A loudmouth, but not an idiot.
No, that didn't. He would have said loudmouth if he meant loudmouth.
Right.
What he said, the reason he said idiot is because he's not allowed on national TV during a postgame press conference to say a-hole.
Right.
That's what he wanted to say. I'm telling you right now, because you could hear it in his voice and especially how firmly he said idiot. You know, he said it three times. He's an idiot. All right. That's what we have to say. He's an idiot. He wanted to say he's an and he couldn't. So he cleaned it up to idiot. That's what I believe. And I got to tell you something. First of all, Kevin Durant is right. Mark Cuban is pretty much an a-hole. He's not an idiot. But what he meant to say was a-hole, and he didn't. Second of all, Kevin Durant putting his hand in front of Russell Westbrook's microphone so that Westbrook couldn't even answer it, saying, I've got this one. I'll handle this question, Russ. This is what I think of Mark Cuban saying that about you. This is what I think of Mark Cuban saying that about us and our tandem here. The second highest scoring duo in the league, behind only Curry and Klay Thompson. This is what I think of that. That anybody who would say that this man sitting next to me right here, Russell Westbrook, is a blank. That's what I think of that. That is going to serve to answer an awful lot of questions, I think. Not just for the rest of these playoffs, but maybe long term for the Oklahoma City Thunder. What are you talking about, France? Here's what I'm talking about. Kevin Durant's going to be a free agent. We know that. There have always been, I think, too, you might want to say, rumors, concerns, whispering that maybe Durant would like to get away from Westbrook because Westbrook tends to be too ball dominant from time to time. Westbrook is one of the best talents in the league. Westbrook probably kind of wants to be his own team's go-to guy. He wants to be Batman and not Robin to Kevin Durant. And Kevin Durant might be ready and willing to give him that because he wants to be the unquestioned leader of his own team, the way LeBron James is the unquestioned leader of his. There might be some friction there, unspoken, but that these two superstars would both rather have the number of shots that they want to get and both rather have the glory that comes with being their team's lone superstar. That's what a lot of people have felt and why Kevin Durant probably is not long for Oklahoma City when his free agency time begins. I think yesterday may have put a very, very, very big dent into that theory. Kevin Durant went out of his way to say, are you nuts? That guy, Mark Cuban, is a blank. He said idiot, but he meant something stronger. Of course this guy is a freaking superstar. He's got 18 triple-doubles this year in 82 games. He is a walking, talking, scoring machine who can get shots whenever he wants them, but who sets guys up and who's athletic enough to be a tremendous rebounder, hence the triple-double numbers. This guy is all of that and more. I think that showed amazing maturity on the part of Kevin Durant. I think it showed amazing solidarity with his teammate. And I think maybe it showed Russell Westbrook something, that his boy, his teammate, a guy that maybe didn't have as much respect for him as he should in Russell's eyes, does have that respect. He wouldn't even let Russell answer the question that was asked of him by the reporter. I got this. Mark Cuban, who said that Kevin Durant, me, speaking in first person here as Kevin, Mark Cuban saying that I am the only superstar on this team, that Russell's an all-star but not a superstar, has no clue about basketball because this man is a superstar. That might be something that hit Russell Westbrook right between the eyes. And when it soaked in to behind the eyes into that brain of his, made him think, man, you know, this cat loves me. I love him. Let's stay together and do this thing. Let's not be Shaq and Kobe and break it up. Of course, Shaq and Kobe broke it up after three championships, but you understand the point. Let's not fight for the ball. Let's not fight for star billing. Let's not fight for, you know, top tier A-list versus B-list, Batman versus Robin crap. Let's just stay together and do our thing. I think that show of respect by Kevin Durant for Russell Westbrook yesterday is going to say a lot, really a lot, in the second round of the playoffs, and as I say, long beyond that, going into the very near and distant future of the National Basketball Association, because I think there's a very good chance they stay together now.
And that's an interesting theory, too, because, you know, all throughout the season and even before this season, when you're talking about Kevin Durant and his impending free agency, most assumed that you know, he was going to leave, because even with Westbrook there, it's still Oklahoma City and those kind of things. So, and the various suitors that are probably out there. So we'll have to obviously see. We won't truly know. We can speculate till we're blue in the face until we get to July when teams can sign. But, yeah, that's obviously something to keep an eye on. And now you have a Spurs-Thunder matchup in the second round as both those series are done. Honestly, at the same time, though, Bob, I'm still just so perplexed by what we saw and how the landscape changes from literally day to day at this point with those injuries now on the Clippers. I mean, it's completely unreal. You lose not just Paul to the broken hand, and even though, again, as you mentioned, they haven't specifically said how long he's going to be out.
They said likely for the rest of the season. Likely is just only until they, you know, get the X-ray back and then the doctor says definitively. But it's a matter of it's just semantics.
Exactly. Yeah, and then you add on Blake Griffin also leaving that game and his quad or knee or whatever. That's the same one he's been having problems with all year. It's why he only played 30 some odd games this season. And it makes the whole thing a wash to me. You know, Curry, even if he's not there for four games or even a whole series, there's no way a Chris Paul-less Clippers team, not to mention a not 100% Blake Griffin, there's no way they're going to beat the Warriors with or without Curry. In fact, I'll go ahead and say it right now. The way this is going, I don't think they're beating the Blazers either. And quite frankly, as much as one wants to tip your cap to the Blazers and what they did this season, losing LaMarcus Aldridge and pretty much everyone not named Lillard or McCollum, it's why I think Terry Stotts deserves to be Coach of the Year in the NBA. But they're not ready. Going up against the Warriors in round two, even without Curry, they're not ready for that moment. They're just not. And even without Curry, they'll get blown out. So we're right back in a way, with or without Curry, it feels like we're right back to where we were before Sunday, which is
exactly
Warriors, Spurs, lean Warriors, although I'm going to lean Spurs only if Curry's thing, you know, lasts longer and keeps going into beyond when he may come back.
Here's the thing. Two responses to some of what you just said, Jim. And if you want to join us, by the way, get in now at 866-240-1065 on this discussion. This is what we're all about. We want to take your phone calls. We want to talk. We want to express our opinions. But we want to listen, too, and get a bunch of other opinions, too. So be a part of this.
Absolutely.
866-240-1065. But two responses to what you just said. One, I wouldn't call it a wash with Curry being – I mean, Chris Paul being down and Steph Curry being out. It's not a wash because Paul means more to the Clippers than Curry does to the Warriors.
I'll agree with that.
And that sounds crazy because Curry's the MVP, and he's the straw that stirs their drink, all of that. But what I mean is they are deep enough to get past a Chris Paul-less Clippers team, much more so than the Clippers are deep enough without Chris Paul to get past a Curry-less Warriors team, because there's enough scoring in enough other places from that Warriors team or on that Warriors team that even though Steph is the best player in the league, probably in winning his second straight MVP, certainly would dictate that.
Right.
Even though he's the best player, he is more replaceable on the Warriors team with Sean Livingston there than Chris Paul is on the Clippers team. Without Chris Paul, the Clippers are sunk. And as you pointed out, we don't know what's going on with Blake Griffin, especially injuring that quad again, which he had been dealing with all year long, in addition to the fist or the hand or whatever he broke when he punched the club assistant. But at any rate, yeah, to me, it's not a wash. It's a bigger blow for the Clippers than it is for the Warriors. And in fact, it's so big a blow that Damian Lillard might just indeed now carry the Blazers past the Clippers and into that next round against the Warriors.
I guess the reason I use the word wash in that, Bob, is that with the Paul injury now and maybe even the Blake Griffin one, the reason I use wash is, now I feel I'm right back to where I would have been, say, Saturday night, thinking about Warriors v. Clippers, which is Warriors, you know, totally should win.
Right. Right, and I agree with that.
Okay. That's the only reason I use the word Washington.
Okay. I take that to mean something different, like each of these injuries cancels each other out.
And, right, and no, because if you, yeah, exactly, because yesterday, when it's just Curry, and he may have missed four or however many possible games in the semis, you know, we're starting to legitimately think, hey, Clippers can finish off this series, they got a legitimate chance to maybe do some things. Now Paul goes down, and that's completely back out the window, and we're kind of back mentally to what we would have been thinking, say, Saturday.
One. Exactly. For those of us who don't want to see the Warriors win. And you know, again, it's really weird. I don't know why, Jim. I like Steve Kerr. Good guy. Great guy.
Former Cavs.
Great story, by the way, too. Of course, he didn't coach the first 30 games of the season. By the way, he was named Coach of the Year today. You think, shouldn't you have to you know, coach most of the season to win Coach of the Year?
Not just that. We know he gets it for the 73 wins. But you know, Coach of the Year to me is who did the truly best coaching job. And I've been saying it and just said it again a few minutes ago. That's Terry Stotts in Portland. That team has no business in the playoffs. They should have lost 50 games considering everybody they lost. And yet here they are. That's why I've been leaning towards Stotts. But
I would seriously give some consideration to Brad Stevens, though, in Boston, to be quite frank. Seriously, I think that as a club, he is just a very, very good coach. He's going to be an NBA champion sooner rather than later. I'm just going to say that. I think Brad Stevens could very well have been the coach of the year if you're going to talk about just, you know, taking the talent you have and making it better and getting yourself to a position. And they're 2-2 now at the Hawks.
Yep.
You know, and that was, you didn't have much respect for the Celtics going into this thing, and maybe you still don't, and we'll see what happens in the rest of this series. But we've got game five going on, man, and guess what? The Celtics, to me, have all the momentum after winning these last two.
Oh, sure.
And I would not be surprised at all to see them come out of here and face the Cavaliers. But I don't want to get too far off. This is what happens. We chase that squirrel down the line there. So let's go back to the point where I was trying to make about the second point about your commentary on the West. You said that ultimately this leads us right back to a Western Conference final between the Warriors and the Spurs. A full-strength Warriors, presuming that Curry, you know, rests the vast majority of, or not rests, but, you know, is recovering and is unable to play for the vast majority of the second-round series, that he is fully healthy when they take on the Spurs in the finals. My issue with that is the assumption that the Spurs are going to the Western Conference Finals. Now, I am the guy, whenever we talk basketball, all season long I've been saying, look, I know the Warriors are the favorite. They're the defending champs. They're the ones on record or on pace to set the record, which, of course, they did. But I like the Spurs better in a series. I think the Spurs could handle the Warriors. Coaching, Popovich is a genius. The age and experience, coupled with the youth and the tremendous talent of guys like Kawhi Leonard, I think, I don't know, and LaMarcus Aldridge really can put them over the top. And I've been saying that. And so I don't want to back off of that. That would be really, really, hypocritical to kind of turn around on that. But I'm just saying what I saw last night, that little link between Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook at the podium, it just was almost like a full-on brotherly hug. Like, man, ain't nobody going to split us up like this. Nobody's going to call you less than a superstar and say, I'm the only superstar here. We are brothers, and we are together going to do this thing. I like the Thunder a lot. Now, are they disciplined enough to get past, I think, the ultimate disciplined team in the Spurs? Maybe not. And if I had to put money on it, which is why I don't gamble, I would probably still pick the Spurs in a very close seven-game series.
Oh, yeah, that's going 6-7, definitely. No question about that.
But I am absolutely not ready to say Spurs and Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. I could very easily see the Thunder rising to the occasion, again, with, you know, everybody on the same page, kind of that little kumbaya thing happening because of Mark Cuban, who clearly was trying to just get into Russell Westbrook's head before the game to try to make him, you know, do too much to show, I'll show you who's not a superstar and take too many shots and freeze out KD and all that stuff. He was trying to play psychological games or warfare with Westbrook. It did not win or did not work. Westbrook and the Thunder won. Westbrook and Durant both had 30. Ninth time they've done that in the playoffs as a tandem, 30 apiece in the playoffs. And only Elgin Baylor and Jerry West, how are those two names? Only Elgin Baylor playing with Jerry West has ever had 30-point games together, with each of them having 30 in the same game in the playoffs. That's a historic, I mean, think about that. Pippen and Jordan didn't do it. You know,
right.
Magic and Kareem didn't do it, or Worthy and Kareem, or any of that kind of stuff. Dr. J and Moses. You go on down the line. You know, Isaiah and Dumars or something like that. Nobody has ever done that nine times in the playoffs. And these two guys just did. I am absolutely all in. That's the wrong thing. I'm backtrack on that right now. I still pick the Spurs to win. But I am absolutely all in on the possibility of a Thunder upset in the second round of those Spurs. It wouldn't shock me. I wouldn't fall to the ground and say, oh, my God, I never saw that coming. Because I got to tell you, I think these guys are on the same page now, and I can see something like that coming.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I can see something like that happening. You still, until further notice, have to lean Spurs, I think, if you're forced to make a pick. But that series is going 6-7, and it smells like back and forth anyway. So it could easily happen.
Yeah, absolutely, it could happen. And like I said, I'm just really bummed out about the Chris Paul injury, because the Chris Paul injury is if he was healthy, it was really supposed to go a long way toward possibly derailing the defending champs from getting back to the Western Conference, or getting back to the finals, I should say, overall. And now I think you're right. I mean, now they're probably going to be able to survive, I would imagine, the Curry injury for as long as it takes, and then be full strength for either Thunder or Spurs in the Western Conference Finals. All right, going to take a time out here, because after the bottom of the hour, and I see on hold, I do, I'm sorry, I just don't have time to take your calls now, because I got to shift gears and talk, Detroit Tigers baseball with Anthony Fennec of the Free Press. And then we're going to talk about, Jim, something that literally just came down the line this afternoon. A new professional franchise could be coming to Detroit, courtesy of a former Detroiter now owning one of the elite franchises in all of professional sports. What in the hell is France talking about? I'll tell you after this, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Baseball, we are ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Good musical choice here. Let that kick for a moment here. Ben? Ben Lahowski taking over at the controls as producer extraordinaire Jim Cushlin heads out to ruin young pitchers' lives forever. Going to be behind the dish for a youth baseball game this evening. I don't know, is it JV? Is he doing a JV game, or what is he doing?
He's doing a freshman.
Freshman game.
Yep.
Going to ruin somebody's career, ruin somebody's life and confidence and what's a strike and what's not. All because he can't see through the smoke that's still emanating from the Marlboro hanging from his lips behind his mask. Between the hitters and the pitchers, honestly, nobody's going to have a clue what the hell is going on with him behind the plate. But that's where he is. Don't turn the music off. I said let it kick a little bit here, man. Plus, I want my MTV. Did you want to kill it?
I only had 40 seconds of the music, Ben.
Oh,
see,
you just
done.
Have the little intro thing and
right.
The whole song there.
It was done, yeah.
You guys are lame, man. Seriously. Seriously, you need the whole doggone thing. I mean,
I know.
I mean, seriously, if you're gonna tease people, especially me, if you're gonna tease me with great music and then like, you know, like kill it after just a second or two, that's not good.
I know, that was rough. That was rough. Oh, right.
Let's pick it up to where it was. Yeah. Yeah. See, you might only be good for 40 seconds here, Big Ben.
Yeah.
I've got the entire duration.
Perfect, perfect.
And by the way, you're the one who admitted on live radio that you're only good for the 40 seconds.
Right.
You're the one who said all you have is 40 seconds to offer. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
I've got, Jiminy Crimmy, I got hours worth of great music here. You're still a little puppy, aren't you, Ben?
Yep.
You're a puppy, so you don't remember when this song came out.
Well, no, I mean, I love classic rock, but hey, I
turn your mic up a little bit. Turn your mic up. Try it again.
Got it.
No, turn your mic up and speak more. I can't hear you very well is what I'm saying.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. What else were you saying?
No, I'm saying, I mean, I love the song. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Yeah, when this video came out, though, man, seriously, in the 80s, it's called, you know, it's Money for Nothing, and I Want My MTV. Well, MTV, what the heck is that? When MTV came out and we saw music set to little mini movies, essentially, it's a 3 to 4 minute movie, that was just unbelievable.
Right.
And this song just told the story so perfectly. Speaking of little puppies, let's bring in Anthony Fennick, who is the Detroit Tigers beat writer for the Detroit Free Press, and he joins us for his weekly visit right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket in Toledo. What's going on, Anthony, Tony? How you doing, brother?
What kind of a segue is that?
Speaking of
little puppies?
Well, yeah, you're a youngster, too.
All right, I guess.
You know, I'm the old grizzled gray bearded veteran here, you know, and because I'm in my 40s and I remember this crap. And you guys, you young puppies, it's not an insult. It's just you guys have youth. You probably don't remember like a lot of the stuff I'm talking about. I don't remember exactly, and I don't know if you want to announce it or not how old you are, but this was in the 80s. You weren't around when this whole thing came down, right?
No, probably not. No, yeah. I wasn't.
That's the segue. You're a puppy. It's not an insult.
Right,
I'm jealous.
Right.
I wish I wasn't the old dog. Old dog who can barely get to the bowl to get any food anymore, for crying out loud. I wish I was young and spry and able to romp through the yard like you guys.
How old are you, Bob?
I'm in my 40s. I'm going to leave it there. Whether I'm closer to 40 or 50 is my business, not yours. On which side of the mountain I am. By the way, hey, Anthony, before we talk about Tigers baseball, I want to finish the little tease that I did before the bottom of the hour break there. And I don't know if you're a fan of soccer or not, Tony, but how do you feel about the MLS potentially coming to the D?
I think it's cool, but I'm just not sure how it would do with so many sports around here. That's my only concern, is just because we have four major sports teams. We have two major college teams. They have the Detroit City FC, which is a smaller niche kind of soccer team that's really developed a big fan base. But I'll tell you what, when you got two guys like Dan Gilbert and Tom Gorris who are backing this, I mean, it seems like they have a lot of momentum to get this done. And if you're going to build a whole new stadium, you just never know. I guess, like I said, the only reservation I would have is that we have so many sports in Detroit, and soccer, it's not, you know, football or baseball. And I just find it, I just think it would be hard for a Major League Soccer team to gain ground in the local sports scene.
You know, everything you just said is spot on. You got four major professional teams, as you point out, and all of the colleges and everything else. But you know what guys like Dan Gilbert and Tom Gores don't usually do? They don't usually undertake endeavors that lose money, man. They don't.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? They don't bet on long shots. They kind of know where profits are, and they seize them, and they choke the living daylights out of them. And if they feel like that there's a market for this here and they can turn profit, I can't imagine they'd want to run a business. Then again, maybe that's why they're pooling their resources. Both of them are wealthy enough to fund their own team. Maybe they're like, hey, I'll go in halvesies with you, and that way if it takes a dump, neither one of us takes the entire hit.
Yeah.
So
I agree with you. And I think it's I think there's a lot of soccer interest in the Metro Detroit area. I mean, you see organizations like Detroit City FC and the Michigan Bucks. There's a very strong youth soccer presence here, but we'll see. I mean, it can't hurt, but I'm just a little bit skeptical of how it's going to fit in the sports scene.
I share that skepticism. I do. Just to quote from the story, by the way, the bid, sources say, has the support of MLS Commissioner Don Garber and includes everybody who knew that MLS's commissioner was Don Garber. Raise your hand. Yeah, I didn't think so. And includes plans for – mine is not up either. Includes plans for a new soccer stadium in downtown Detroit. New stadium in downtown Detroit at a site to be determined. Both owners hinted at their MLS plans on Tuesday, today, with tweets aimed at each other. Dan Gilbert tweeting, "Hey, at Tom Gores, you know what's great about sports? One moment you're rivals, and the next day you can be rooting for the same team." Obviously, they just finished off their series against one another. And Gores responds, "You're right, at Cavs, Dan. Let's kick around." Get it? In quotes, kick around some ideas and try to make something happen. And, of course, the reference to soccer there. So I think it's a fascinating thing. I would not watch it for one second because I don't like soccer. But that's just a personal thing. I wouldn't wish failure on it. I wonder how many Detroit fans would be into it. And so we tweeted it out. Follow us on Twitter at Sports Radio 106.5. And, no, not yet. It's not up on the Facebook page yet, I'm told. But it's on the Twitter feed at Sports Radio 106.5. Would you support Major League Soccer in Detroit or... is it just, you know, too crowded, as Anthony Fennec just said, too crowded in terms of the sports around town? And is soccer still, quite frankly, just a little bit too boring to Americans, especially MLS version? We'll get the same question up on Facebook coming up in a while.
I got a segue for you, Bob.
Yeah, go ahead.
Why don't we flip around to Tigers?
Wow, look at that. Well done.
Hey,
yeah, hold on. You think you deserve this? Yes. Nicely done by Tony Anthony Fennec. How about that? All right, let's talk about those birds that are flying around Comerica these days without licenses. Tyler Cott, we should play this for the sake of fairness to Tyler Collins. We should probably play his apology for flying that bird after losing that fly ball yesterday, and we'll get your thoughts on it.
To hear boos come from the home crowd set off a fuse inside of me, and like I said, I lashed out and I shouldn't have.
So on the play, when did you lose the ball? Did you just never see it?
Yeah, it got up in that high sky. It's that dusk period. In one brief spot, and I mean, nobody. I'm looking around screaming, I don't see it. Nobody else sees it. It was unfortunate.
Was it almost like non-voluntary, like almost just reactionary? Like you hear the boos and you just react?
Completely. It was frustration. It was frustration. I don't want to hear that at home. You know, we deal with that enough on the road. With that being said, I should be more mature and more grown up than that to be able to deal with it. And that's where I apologize.
He's spot on. And I understand, believe it or not, you know, Anthony, I understand. We've all had that moment of frustration, particularly if something embarrassing happens in front of, you know, 25, 30, 35,000 people, national TV or whatever the case might be. A lot of us would just be like, you know what, and want to act out like that. I get it. It probably was involuntary, something that wasn't thought out. But yet at the same time, he has to keep his composure and be more mature there. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think exactly what you think. I mean, he just can't do that. I mean, the fans are undefeated, and I understand, if anything, what he did was he showed that he was human. I mean, this is like you said, you're getting booed by 20,000 people. That's, you know, your natural first reaction. And I mean, Tyler Collins is not a seasoned professional, okay? I mean, this is, you know, he's going into his parts of his third big league year. I mean, he's not a seasoned kind of professional kind of guy, but, when you're up in the big leagues and you're wearing that uniform, you are expected to act a certain way. And that was that's definitely not the way to act. And it's unfortunate because, I mean, this is something that Tyler Collins is a good guy. I like talking to him. I thought, to be honest with you, I thought his apology was very forthright. It was very honest. Even the part about, you know, like we hear this enough on the road. We don't want to hear it at home. Well,
yeah.
Some people take that as, oh, well, don't give the fans in there. But it's reality. The only thing that's unfortunate about this is that this is something that in reality he's probably not going to be able to run away from anytime soon. He doesn't have, you know, all-star ability in the field. He is kind of, you know what I mean, a guy that's really trying to grind his way and mold himself into a major league player. And it's a little bit more of an uphill battle today than it was yesterday.
So you think fans are really going to hold this against him for a while?
Yeah, I do.
See, I hope not, man, because everything you said I agree with. I thought it was a very forthright apology. It wasn't like, I have to say I'm sorry because I'm in trouble. I have to apologize because the manager, the owner, the GM, the marketing director who sells tickets, they're telling me I have to because these are the paying customers, blah, blah, blah. I think he legitimately felt bad. He called himself immature. I feel like it was a momentary reaction, and I hope that a whole bunch of blue-collar workers, you know, sitting in the stands at Comerica, kind of feel it and get it and say, you know what, dog, yeah, I get it. He couldn't see it. It's not like he dropped the ball for lack of hustle. It's not like he didn't run out a ground ball that he could have beaten out, especially once he saw the shortstop bobble it. He didn't do something that the fans just can't forgive, like you know, Jake something or not make an effort. He lost it in the lights, heard it, got mad about it, reacted, and I hope a bunch of, you know, you just said it, he's not a star caliber guy anyway. I would hope that a bunch of blue collar guys understand this in baseball parlance, in baseball terms. This blue collar guy just kind of got frustrated for a minute.
Yeah, I would hope that too. I just, I think it's going to take some time, and it might take a couple big hits, you know what I mean, to play a nice play in the field, something like that. And I just think that the Detroit sports fan is a different kind of sports fan, and it's one that takes things very personally. I think Detroit sports fans are a little bit sensitive to a degree. I wouldn't even say a little bit sensitive. They're sensitive to a degree. And when somebody comes out and, you know, gives them the finger and says this and that, I think they take that very personally, especially when you're hitting 100. But again, I think that what we saw last night was just a human being, a real person. I mean, for being around Tyler Collins, I mean, he's one of the most real guys inside that clubhouse. And like I said, it's unfortunate at this point of his career for this to happen. But hopefully today, and I'm not there, but hopefully today he's having a little bit, the storm has kind of blown over a little bit, even though I don't think that's the case with him being on deadspin everywhere else.
Yeah, fans are enraged. And I understand it, but I also hope after the rage, you know, it's kind of like him. He was really mad at them for, like, come on, you're booing me because I couldn't find it in the lights or in the sun or in the dusk or whatever the case might be. It's not like I was not hustling here. You're booing me because I couldn't see something. Well, F you, you know.
I don't mean to cut you off, but I wanted to get this in before we switch subjects. I also think half of those boos were directed to Justin Upton, too, for not being able to field the ball cleanly. He booted the ball. The guy went to third base. So I don't think this was just a booing of Tyler Collins here. I think it was Upton too, but obviously Upton, he is a seasoned professional. He knows how to, you know what I mean, handle those situations. He's been booed at home before, I'm sure. But with Collins, it was just kind of a reactionary episode.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up about Upton. And he, of course, is earning some boos just for his early season play anyway. But I think. He reacted the way an angry person would when he heard the boos and assumed they were all for him, and then thought afterwards better of it and said, you know what, that was immature and I'm sorry. I hope the fans who are enraged right now, and I know there are a lot of them, and I understand the Detroit sports fan that you just, you know, the way you just described them, but that they have the same reaction, which is, you know what, you flipped us off, blank you, you asshole. And then I hope they take a deep breath after a day or two and say, you know what, yeah, we get it. We've all been there. You know, we're a blue-collar town. We're fighting every day. You know, poverty is all over this town. It's a tough battle for all of us, and sometimes we all just kind of, you know, we miss one, and you know, we swing and we miss, or we, you know, can't find it in the lights or in the sun, and we get it, and I really hope that's the case because I think it's an unfortunate thing for him. All right, let's talk about overall. Big win yesterday. Absolutely had to have. First game of the series against the A's, 7-3. Miggy finds a couple, which of course everybody's been waiting to have happen. But prior to that, the four straight losses, the sweep at the hands of the Indians. And what was it, six out of seven losses?
Something like that.
Yeah, six out of seven and seven out of nine. There you go. I'm going all the way back. What's going on? Clearly, you know, nothing is really – it's not to the point where you can pinpoint one thing. It's the starting. It's the bullpen. It's the batting. It's literally a little bit of everything. Nothing is really clicking or has been for the last 2 weeks.
No, and – the ironic thing is the most consistent thing that they've had has been their bullpen. And for the first time in a long time, we can say that. But I just think the middle of that lineup went through a very cold spell that, I mean, they may or may not have shaken out of last night. I mean, it's one game, but those are the kind of games that usually you can build off of and turn the corner. But Justin Upton cannot hit anything right now. And I think one of the things that I was talking to Upton about yesterday's game, I think getting in some situational hitting situations, like where he had to drive in a sacrifice fly last night. I think that's going to help him kind of get out of this swing. But the last couple weeks, I mean, they're not pitching with any consistency, at least starters. They're not hitting. I mean, they had up until last night when Cabrera hit those two home runs, they had two home runs in their last six games. They were both from Jared Saltalamacchia. When Jared Saltalamacchia is your offensive MVP so far, something's not going right. I was never really concerned with Cabrera because he's Cabrera. You know, he's the best hitter in baseball. But the longer this goes on with Upton, I mean, I think he's got too much talent to have this go on all year. But you just got to wonder if he's putting too much pressure on himself right now because of the dollars he got. But so far, Brett Ausmus is kind of sticking to the plan. He's not moving him in the order at all, and I think that they'll swing themselves out of this for sure. I think they have a very good offense, but it's just one of those things that there's really nothing you can do about it. They're just struggling in the middle of the lineup.
Yeah, it's more than that though, and that's what I wanted to ask you a little bit about Brent Ausmus in that last game against the Indians, where he went out to Brian Shaw not once but twice about the ring. Was he trying to fire up his guys? Was he in desperation mode because of the way things have been going? Is he feeling some pressure, feeling some heat? Because we all know that there was a difficult decision to be made by Avila when he took over to bring him back this year. What was causing, because I found that to be a little bit embarrassing. He wasn't just saying, hey, you know what, you know, he could rub up the ball with it. He was out there screaming at the umpire, I'm telling you, he's rubbing up the ball. I just found that to be kind of symbolic, if you will, of the entire stretch that the Tigers have been in, and you know what, we're gonna look for excuses for our failure. We're gonna look for excuses for our poor play. And he went out there and tried to take that out on Shaw in such a way. That's why I'm wondering, just as an overall organization, they had the closed door meeting. It didn't really bring many results, you know. And then he's out there acting that way. I'm just wondering, as an organization, are they starting to panic a little bit, even though we're not even to May yet?
I don't think they're starting to panic a little bit. I think that Brett Ausmus is feeling the heat a little bit, though. And I think yesterday night's win, I think, really was kind of a sigh of relief probably on his part. You can just tell from his mannerisms. He was getting a little frustrated on Saturday and Sunday. And, I mean, look, if we're talking about Tyler Collins here being human, you got to talk about Brett Ausmus being human, too. I mean, he knows what happened last year. He knows how close he came to losing his job. And he knows that this team has to start off strong, and they have to start off. They have high expectations. They have to, you know, this is a winning team. They have to be a winning team, or he's not going to have a job. And if they're not a winning team, a couple weeks from now, then a change could happen. I kind of read that the Shaw situation somewhat similarly. Sorry about that. Mm-hmm. To you, and I think the Indians thought it was pretty embarrassing too. Just hearing kind of Francona's comments after the game, Brian Shaw's comments. I think that was kind of a situation where Ausmus isn't a Jim Leland kind of guy where he can just go out there and get thrown out and make it look authentic, you know? He's got to kind of pull out of his back pocket some of these instances, and in that instance, it really wasn't the right instance. I mean, we're talking about a rubber ring on a glove hand, you know, and to come out the first time, okay, but then to come out again, to me, was
right.
I was like, all right.
That was really the bad one. Yeah, that just was a bad look. It just reeked of desperation.
He can hide behind the fact that it's like, okay, well, this is against the rules. Well, yeah, it is, but come on now. That's probably the long, roundabout way to answer your question about the manager and his status, but
I don't think so, Anthony. No, I give you much more credit than that. There is no simple answer as to what's going on and why, like I said, he kind of put on that display. I thought it was a little embarrassing. I thought it was a little desperate. I thought it was a little over the top. And I'm wondering, is there method to the madness, or is he just kind of feeling the heat that there's a pinch on him right now because his team and all of the money that Mr. Ehrlich spent to add Upton, to add Zimmerman, and to remake the bullpen and provide all, you know, what a lot of people called one of the best lineups in the American League, if not a baseball, and here it is. You know, the starting pitching isn't getting it done. The lineup isn't getting it done. You know, the best hitter in baseball. I mean, Miggy isn't hitting like it. You know, he's probably feeling it a little bit, and I think that just kind of came out in that example. So I thought your answer was great. All right, Anthony, we're out of time, brother. Thanks so much for the thoughts. We always appreciate catching up with you on Tigers baseball and on the Detroit. You know what we need now? Next time we talk to you, I'm going to expect you to have a name for us for the new Detroit MLS soccer team. Are you going to be able to come up with one for us?
I will come up with that. And the next time I want to talk to you guys, I got to hear Jim Cushman's voice. All right.
Cush is out ruining the careers of young baseball players right now. He's behind the dish. He's behind the plate umpire in a freshman high school baseball game right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so he's out there ruining some hitter's life by not knowing what the strike zone is, or conversely ruining some pitcher's understanding of the game.
He's probably taking joy in it too.
Oh, no doubt. Other than the fact that he doesn't really understand, he's not doing it on purpose. He just has no idea what he's watching. But that's just Cush. Cush is doing his thing. But I'm sure he'll be back next week when we talk again.
Nice, Bob. All right,
brother.
Thank you.
Anthony, Tony, Young Puppy, appreciate you being a part of the conversation. As always, we're late for our top of the hour break. Let's get there now. ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.